You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
Gather round, loyal listeners. It's the Brooking Report on Radio 1 91 FM.
Alrighty, we are joined by Rachel in person, despite her busy schedule. By having to do so much parliamentary urgency, she has made it back to Orthipoti, safe in the southern metropolis that we reside in currently. Good morning to you, Rachel. How are we?
Oh, I'm good. I'm very pleased to be in Dunedin, but heading back to Wellington later today.
Oh, my God.
For the last week.
When do you fly out?
I fly out at 4:25.
Oh, right. That's a decent time to be flying.
Yeah.
I feel like, okay. You know, you can have a nice dinner in Wellington.
Yes, that is a possibility with 4:25. You're correct. I do not have anything organised though, because I have lots of work to do.
True. Well, do you get Uber like stuff to your parliamentary office?
No, some of my colleagues do. I haven't worked that one out. But we had one of these midnight sessions a couple of weeks ago, and one of my colleagues, he Ubered in ice creams. And it was just the best
like
thing.
Individual ice creams or tubs of ice cream?
No, just those packets of the mini magnums or trumpets or something.
I can't remember
what it was, but it was like you're sitting around at 11 o'clock at night going, oh, what, you know, I might have to go back into the house and do something. So an ice cream was very good.
Yeah. Do you know that we're the most ice cream consuming country on the planet per capita?
Well, I'm not surprised by that. Mm. And aren't we lucky to have Paddy's and Cream in Dunedin
making amazing
ice cream, and now out at the beach as well, Sorbella, making the Italian stuff.
And also Blue Cockatoo in the Octagon now.
Oh, yes. I haven't been there.
Good.
I hear it's good. Amazing.
And
too.
Gelato Junkie. I feel like I haven't had any great ice cream in Wellington. Not saying there isn't a good one. Well,
yeah,
like, actually, Duck Island.
I've got the Duck Island, but that's not from Wellington, right? Whereas we have our own Dunedin. That's like four or five businesses we just named between us then of amazing ice cream.
And soon they'll have, you know, installments in Wellington. last time we spoke about a need to sort of curb urgency powers, as this government has implemented dozens of pieces of legislation using urgency rules. Would Labour consider using urgency the same way this government has done to undo much of the legislation if you get into power in the next election next year?
We're going to have a package of sort of democracy measures for the election, and that policy has been worked on at the moment. And we're very aware of the urgency that this government has used, and have made submissions against it in terms of standing orders and things like that. So there is no way we will be using urgency like this government is, because you can use urgency. Urgency has always been used around budgets, and urgency has been used for emergencies. But what this government is doing is day-to-day business. They're running through all stages urgency. So we had one this week that was to do with the Resource Management Act and extending consents. And the rationale was, oh, it's a Christmas present for farmers. And it's just a terrible way to make law. There was no analysis. It was just awful.
Yeah.
And what terrible, terrible reasoning for abusing this process.
Have you encountered many typos in like the really rushed legislation, or have they managed to get those?
No, there are some typos. And look, the drafters at the Parliamentary Council Office are amazing, and they do a phenomenal job. But no, we have had instances where either it's the government has had to amend some of its amendment papers, so they'll drop at the last minute, even when they're not using all stages urgency. If they're not using it, they'll then just drop this huge amendment to the bill that's been through Select Committee that totally changes it. And quite often I've seen examples of then the minister has to amend that amendment because they've been going too fast.
That's crazy. So would your democracy measures curb those behaviours?
Yes, that's the point that you
and
do.
Could
good lawmaking.
Could if in 2029, if National get back in, could they use urgency to get rid of that measure?
This is the thing with the parliamentary democracy. It's very hard to entrench anything. And, you know, most of us aren't keen on entrenchment anyway.
Yeah.
You know, we say parliament is sovereign, but it does. You've generally had conventions where urgency, all stages urgency, wasn't used very often. And if it was, there was an emergency, or there was a post-enactment review, or there was some other very good reason, like national security. And this government has had one on space that we were okay with going through all stages urgency.
Yeah.
But said that there should have been a post-enactment review. So there's a group of parliamentarians who can look at a bill after it's gone through at speed and work out if it needs to be amended because there are some mistakes or some unintended consequences.
Mm. It'll be very fascinating to see what happens there. I want to talk about some of the big reforms going on in the local government sphere. I know that you're not the local government minister, but you are the Minister for Environmental Planning. The two have a lot of overlap.
Spokesperson, sorry.
The government is looking to scrap regional councils and bundle their responsibilities onto local councils, which it's, you know, at the same time they're trying to force those councils to compensate landowners for significant restrictions to impacting developments. How will council cope with these councils cope with these new duties and fiscal challenges, do you think?
Councils are being put in a really rough position. So regional councils are those councils that do our air and water consents, biodiversity, a lot of emergency management as well.
Yep.
And district councils or territorial authorities or city councils, they deal with land-based issues. So they deal with waste, they deal with our drinking water and our wastewater and stormwater and urban planning. So the idea that the mayors, so this government put out a very rushed, tiny little consultation document that's terribly thought through and it's just unbelievably bad for such a major reform piece, and said, well, one of the options is for the mayors, so those people who deal with wastewater and rubbish and libraries and town planning, should also deal with the environmental issues that come with taking water from rivers, letting people pollute rivers to some degree, and air sheds and air pollution. It just seems really badly thought through. But we have to remember the context of this, and that is that when Labor came in 2017, one of the major promises was swimmable rivers. So there was a whole lot of work to do, environmental, secondary legislation, so sort of they're called national environmental standards and national policy statements and regulations that regional councils had to implement. And they were just at the stage of implementing them last year. They'd been through a big process of consultation and a whole lot of work. And this government stopped them from implementing them. And it's very clear that this government doesn't want rivers to be swimmable and wants to enable more pollution for short-term growth. So that is, they talk about more dairy farms and how that having more dairy farms is somehow going to sort out the productivity issues of the New Zealand economy. And Shane Jones, meanwhile, does understand how councils work. I listen to other politicians and they mix the different types of councils up all the time. Shane Jones has a BM his bonnet against the Otago Regional Council and recently called them demonic egg beaters.
That's right. Yeah.
What does that mean? Anyway, these people
He's crashing out.
Elected, they're trying to improve our environment as they were instructed to do. This government is coming down and saying, no, don't do that. So it's all part of this bigger picture of this government wanting more pollution.
I'm not sure if you're familiar with Unataia E,
which was the
exhibition that was at the DPAG quite recently. And when I say recently, I say several months ago. But one really key image from that exhibition was the map of the South Island, Te Waipounamu, and it had red lines crossing through waterways where the nitrogen levels are being deemed unsafe. And the South Island was just covered in red.
Yeah, well, particularly in Southland and Canterbury.
Yeah.
I have that map in my office.
Oh.
And it's a beautiful exhibition. And the power of that exhibition
is that those
photos were of degraded waterways which used to be abundant with food. So the Mahangakai there, these were places where you'd go for your tuna or whitebait or some of the lagoons, a whole lot of other fish species as well. And like some of them were puddles, They were brown. There was no aquatic life.
Algal blooms, you know.
Absolutely. And these are what we were trying to fix, you know, to make those rivers swimmable again. Mm. And if they're swimmable, then you also have a whole lot of kai in them as well.
Yeah, yeah. I want to talk about one really weird aspect of the government's new approach to resource management, which is compensating landowners for significant restrictions that impact developments. A little birdie, I'm not going to reveal who the birdie is, told me that this has to do with two key environmental planning keywords. You've got significant landscapes or features, and then the same thing, but effectively for ecological areas that aren't as charismatic. Is that correct?
That's right.
I can't remember what the other acronym for that one is.
SNAs is sometimes what they're...
Yes.
Significant yes. natural areas yes. is what some plans have called them. So the general idea here is that if a council puts a protection over a piece of land, and it's particularly important when we think about biodiversity, and this idea... Well, I'll come back to what I'll say about that. So a council can say, oh... Landowner, we've identified that you've got these really important ecosystems in your land, mm. and so we're going to put some controls over how much of that indigenous, say, bush that you can clear, mm-hmm. that you can cut down.
Mm-hmm.
And now what this Act says is, well, if you do that and you have a significant impact on the landowner, then the council has to compensate them.
It prioritises property rights, essentially.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And this idea of priority rights being at the base of our whole legal system is very flawed in the New Zealand context. And the idea that a landowner's rights to the biodiversity on their land is absolute is not something that's been in our common law in New Zealand. This is a new concept, and they're importing it from America,
mm-hmm.
and it's a terrible thing to be doing. If your land really can't be used because of planning provisions, there is already a provision in the Resource Management Act in Section 85, if anyone wants to have a look,
mm-hmm.
and that provides for your land being able to be taken off you if you can't use it because of the planning restrictions. So that is already there,
mm.
but this is taking it another step further, and I am very worried, and many environmental groups are very worried as well, that it will have this chilling effect on environmental protections, because of course councils have no money.
Exactly.
And I think you mentioned in your question before about rates caps and taking on all these extra functions.
Yeah.
And so they're having a really hard time. So of course ratepayers aren't going to go, oh yes, we want you to go and give that private landowner lots of money. That's just not going to happen.
Yeah. The same little birdie who told me about the compensation resource management reform also said you can either have efficient or cheap councils. They're not the same thing.
Well, yes, that is true. But, you know, poor councils, almost all of their money goes into really boring things mm. that people don't notice that much until they go wrong.
Mm.
So that is your drinking water and mm-hmm. your wastewater and our waste as well.
Mm-hmm.
When that's where the big spend is, because and roads as well, because those infrastructures, they're expensive and they're not the first thing that people want to talk about. So this idea that there's all these nice-to-haves, the examples that the Prime Minister has used, there's been one about public toilets and them being too nicely decorated or something. And public toilets are really important, and they're important for accessibility, they're important for families, they're important for tourism,
yeah.
for all sorts of things, yeah. So what a silly thing to
Safety.
Pick on. But then they've also picked on a garden that was on top of a bus stop, as if it was a pretty amenity thing. A garden on a bus stop is there to prevent heavy rainfall from going into the drains and causing floods.
Mm.
This is basic green infrastructure to stop a very expensive problem. So
yeah.
it is a good investment, yet this Prime Minister is so short-sighted that he says it's a nice-to-have.
Yeah, it's infuriating. One thing I do want to probe about this resource management reform is that they're planning on streamlining the different zones around Aotearoa. Now, there's 1,100 different zones across the country that are decided by councils. This bill would try to standardise these zones. Whether the government is doing it in the right way, Is this a good idea, you know, reducing that number from 1,100 to something much lower?
What this government did is it brought back the Resource Management Act. So Labor spent a long time, and I was involved in this process, of repealing the Resource Management Act and replacing it with a Spatial Planning Act and a Natural and Built Environments Act. Now, many of the things that were in those two pieces of legislation are in this government's new round of legislation 2 years after they brought back the RMA and repealed their legislation. And it's very frustrating because they say, oh, we're so efficient. So we had the Spatial Planning Act and they had the Planning Act. We had the Natural and Built Environments Act and they have the Natural Environment Act. So they've got rid of two letters, B and S. Now, we'll go on to what they're doing in terms of both reforms have reduced the number of plans. So you have one main plan active at the regional space. So that's Otago and Southland. So, and they're doing a similar thing. That seems good. Both reforms had a whole lot more national direction and trying to move all of the energy in the system away from consent by consent arguments and having those arguments in the plans or in the national direction. So they both do that. So this idea of standardised zones, it probably does go a bit further than where Labor was going, but it wouldn't have been impossible in Labor's reforms either. So as long as they are made properly and that there are good, if councils have good reasons to need a bespoke zoning provision, I don't have a huge problem with those at all. Of course, the devil is in the detail, as always. Both Labor's reforms and National's reforms have environmental bottom standards. However, National's seem to have some ways to get around a National bottom line, an environmental bottom line, which defeats the purpose, really, of having a bottom line, if you can get around it. So there, and the main differences are this thing that we've talked about with the private property rights and the diminishment of mana whenua involvement.
And we'll talk about that very, very shortly. I want to talk about climate change across both bills. I control IFT, both of them, and they were climate change is mentioned 9 times. Most of these mention that the government must abide by local climate adaptation plans, assessing climate resilience in a given natural area, and, you know, add that future planning must be climate adaptation conscious. Is this enough consideration? I mean, the Labor government was working on an entire RMA climate-themed bill. Is this enough consideration for climate change in these new resource bills?
No. And there's 2 points to that. So this government is still working on another adaptation-specific bill, and that needs to happen for when you have existing homes in areas that will be affected by climate change. And it's very difficult to work out, well, what are the triggers for when they have to move and who pays for it and how much do they pay for these issues? So that's still a work in progress. A difference between National's reforms and Labor's reforms, though, is in climate mitigation. So that is reducing climate pollution. And there is nothing in their bills about reducing climate pollution. And this government says, well, we've got the ETS to do that, the Emissions Trading Scheme. The ETS is just one tool, and they've broken it. It's totally broken at the moment, and they are doing nothing on reducing climate pollution. One of the bills we did last week in all stages urgency was a change to the biogenic methane targets and to stop the ETS being linked to our nationally determined contribution number as well. So all they are doing is stopping all their policies that we had to stop climate pollution, so the incentives to buy EVs, incentives to use public transport, a climate emergency response fund, the GIDI fund to look at heavy industry that uses a lot of processing heat and trying to electrify all of that. All of that work is gone. They've cut the funding to ECA, the Energy Conservation Authority.
They've destroyed the government science sector.
Absolutely. So this government just really wants to burn the world down.
Yeah, very short-termist. Now, thinking about mana whenua, I did I did scan both documents for what their treaty obligations are, and it seems like it's pretty business as usual. There's note of consulting Māori iwi on development. What do you think of the sort of mana whenua considerations in these two new bills?
So the Resource Management Act has several Māori provisions. One's at Section 6E, and that is about the significance of Māori relationships with water and air and land.
Mm-hmm.
And at 7A, there is kaitiakitanga. And at 8, there is a treaty provision which is to take into account. In our reforms that we did, we changed that treaty provision so it was to give effect to the principles. But also we had mana whenua at the table in the making of the plans that I spoke about earlier.
Mm.
This government has got a treaty provision that's not a take into account or give effect to. It's a treaty is met by some specific actions. And there is no mana whenua at the table. So I think arguably it's a step backwards from the RMA.
Damn.
But we will wait for the submissions to see that. But it is a giant, giant leaps backwards from Labor's legislation, and it's very disappointing.
Mm. Moving on from RMA stuff, next year is an election year. No doubt everyone at the Labor caucus retreat 2 weeks ago was very, very conscious about this, and it was a big sort of rebrand and launch for next year. For the past 70-odd years, Dunedin's been a pretty safe electorate for Labor. I think there was like one national candidate in the 70s who won. You won 40% of the vote in 2023. Given this history of the time being relatively left, relatively Labour, does that make you less stressed than some of your colleagues?
Good question. It was 1975 that National won the seat.
Yes.
Less stressed. Well...
Because you still have to, I guess, you're kind of on an Otago bill with the Tairi candidate, Ingrid Leary.
That's right.
And so she had a very tight race in the last election.
She did have a tight race. Yeah. And the thing is, maybe I am slightly less stressed than some other electorates, but I am not taking anything for granted.
No.
Not at all. Mm. And I was really pleased to be confirmed as Labour's candidate for the 2026 election, whenever that is, yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And that was great. And we also have a lot of green vote in Dunedin as well. Dunedin's a very progressive and wonderful seat. So maybe slightly less stressed, but definitely not stressed,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But very happy to start campaigning again next year.
Mm-hmm.
For the seat that I love.
Yeah, hell yeah. And this is just the last, I guess, question. What do you anticipate as the biggest issues for Otipoti, and what do you think Labour is offering that you believe that other parties aren't, specifically for solving problems for Dunedinites?
Yeah, so Dunedin, the hospital rebuild is still a huge issue.
Mm-hmm.
This government slowed it down by 18 months, and the people of Dunedin made their feelings heard very clearly. So Chris Hipkins promised at the Christchurch Annual Conference last year to build the hospital that we promised. So we need to be very clear about what that means and tracking that. So that will be one thing going into the election. Another big issue for Dunedin, unfortunately, it's replicated around the country, is the housing issues here.
Mm-hmm.
So we have people who are homeless, but we also have this government stopping the building of many kāinga ora houses. So we've seen them trying to sell the land off in Port Chalmers and stop what is an amazing development on Carroll Street, which is right in the centre of Dunedin. It's the 1 and 2 bedroom units, which the minister says he wants, so continuing to work on that.
Mm-hmm.
Then obviously Labor was really proud in 2020 to bring in the healthy homes standards, to bring in the legislation for that. That only came into effect in July this year.
Yeah.
So we know we've had the Ministry of Business and Innovation and Employment down looking at student flats recently and reporting on that. So there is a whole lot more work to do in that space as well, because it is outrageous. The people who have come into my office with disgusting stories of flats where they've actually gone to the effort of going through the tenancy tribunal process, and yet they still have ended up having to pay landlords for just horrible, horrible situations.
Mm.
And this was before all of the cases that I've talked about and have seen have been before that Healthy Home Standard came in on 1 July. So really want to see what difference that makes and what further work needs to be done there. So those are two big issues for Dunedin.
Mm-hmm.
And the funding of this place and the and the Polytech, of course, as well, are huge issues because, you know, we are a university town, a tertiary education town, and all the better for it.
Yep, completely agree. Last quick question. New Year's Eve plans. What do you got?
None. So sad.
G chilling.
Well, I don't know. We might have plans. My husband's been away a lot. I've been away a lot recently, and we have not yet organised any sort of Christmas break. He's working over Christmas, and I think he might be working New Year's Eve as well. So we'll be in Dunedin.
Okay. Well, there's plenty of room for other plans, you know.
That's right.
Ambiguity leaves a lot of potential futures open. Thank you for coming on the program throughout this whole year. I'm very keen to have you back on the program next year as well, and we'll see what happens. But thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, and Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas, happy holidays. All right, folks, that was Rachel Brooking, Labour's Dunedin MP, the Dunedin MP for Labour, and just the Dunedin MP in general. We're talking to Rachel about election 2026, about resource management, and so much more.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.